So we're beginning here at the second set of two dots on the top of Chofem and Aleph. Gemara begins, Tana Tana Kameid Rabbi Yitzchok Bar Abba. We have a braita that says the following, Vayakrev et Ola Vayaseah Kamishpat. That's a pasuk that's found on the Yom HaShmini with regards to the Miluim, when they were consecrating the Mishkan. Rashi says it's a reference to the Ola of Aaron that was brought on the eighth day. So therefore, it's an olat hayachid that is brought bechovah as an obligation on that day. Tosafot will take issue with that, and we'll discuss that after we've gone through the Gemara. Now, the Gemara says, based on that kamishpat, what does it mean that you bring it kamishpat, like the laws or statutes that are already in place for it? Kamishpat olat nedava. Like the way that an olat nedava is brought, a voluntary olat is brought. Those are the first psukim that are found in Sefer Vayikra. It says about an ola, daber b'nei so amat v'lehem adam ki yakriv mikem kurban la'ashem. So ki yakriv means when you want to bring it, voluntarily. So that's an olat nedava. Min ha'beima min ha'bakar min ha'tzon tokivu et kurbanchem. And then im ola kurbano, that's the setting for this. V'samach yado rosh ha'ola. So you have to do smicha on the ola. So we learn out clearly from the psukim that there's a requirement of smicha on an olat nedava. What we don't know is what's the din with regards to an olat chova, an obligatory olat that is brought in the mikdash, and we're going to be speaking about here as an olat yachid of an individual that's brought in the mikdash, does it require smicha? And so from this braita, we learned that kamishpat means similar to the way that it was already prescribed by the olat nedava. That's what you do by the olat chova. Amalei, so now, when he was presenting this braita to Rabbi Yisrael Barabba, he says, Dharmala Chmani, Rabbi Yisrael Barabba says, the one who taught you this braita or this mishnah, whose position do you think they were following? Beit Shammai? That this is Beit Shammai? Delo gamrei shalmei chuva mishalmei nedava? Because they don't learn an obligatory shlamim from a voluntary shlamim. So we know from our mishnah already that when it came to the shalmei chuva, which is the chagigah that is brought on Yom Tov, Beit Shammai says that you don't do smicha on that shlamim. So they don't learn a shalmei chova from the prescribed rules by a shalmei nedava. Because again, in the beginning of Sefer Vayikra, in Paragimel, when it speaks about a shlamim, there again it says, v'im zevach shlamim korbano, and then the next pasuk says, v'samach yodo rosh korbano. So we know with regards to a shalmei nedava that there is a requirement of smicha. That's not necessarily true by Shalmei Chuvah, because we have no indication as to what is the din. So since there is no limud, or direct indication of that, the assumption is that there is no smicha by Shalmei Chuvah. And who is of that opinion? That is Beit Shammai, which we saw in our Mishnah, who thinks that there's no smicha by Shalmei Chuvah. And therefore, when you bring this braita that learns an olat chuvah from an olat nedava, that will be the position of Beit Shammai. Because de'i Beit Hillel, you think this braita is fine in the position of Beit Hillel? Came into Gamrei, Shalmei Chova, Mishalmei Nedava, since they already learn a Shlamim of a Chova from Shalmei Nedava, because we know from our Mishnah that Beit Hillel says you do smicha on the Chagigah. So they have smicha on the Chagigah, and where do they know that from? Well, they must have learned that from the paradigm of the Shalmei Nedava to Shalmei Chova. So if they already learned Shalmei Chova from Shalmei Nedava, Olot Chova, Nami Loti Baikra, then why do you need a pasuk to teach you about an olat chova, the gamrei meolat nedava? It'll just be learnt from a nedava. And as Rashi explains it over here, it will be a binyanav, which is that we have established the prescribed way to bring a shlamim, which we have the prescribed way to bring an ola, and that's spelled out by an olat nedava, and spelled out by a shalmei nedava. So then when it comes to a shlamim of a chova, or an ola of a chova, we don't need the Torah to tell us specifically how they are brought because we already have that prescribed previously. And so we're going to assume whatever's true of the Olat Nedava will be true in the Olat Chova and require smicha. And so too by the Shlamim. So just like Beit Hillel learned out Shlomei Chova from Shlomei Nedava without any pasuk to guide them, they could do the same thing by an Olat and have learned out an Olat Chova from Olat Nedava without any guiding or limud from the pasuk. How do you know that that's their source? How do you know the source for Beit Hillel's view that we saw in the Mishnah that you do smicha on Shalmei Chova comes or is derived from Shalmei Nedava? Dilma Olat Chova Gmire. Maybe they learned it out from an Olat Chova, meaning that just like an Olat Chova has a requirement of smicha, similar to the way that the Olat Nedava does, so too, a Shalmei Chova, similar to an Olat Chova, will have a requirement of smicha, meaning that it's not learnt directly from Shalmei Nedava, but rather it's learnt in a superior to its manner, which is that the Olat Chova is learned from Olat Nedava. And once I know about Olat Chova, I'll extrapolate that to Shamei Chova. So maybe this is the source for Beit Hillel's position, and they just believe that the Pasuk teaches you Olat Nedava to Olat Chova. And once I know that, then I can now extrapolate that through a Binyan Av from the paradigm of Olat Chova, saying that it has a requirement of Smicha. So too a Shamei Chova will have a requirement of Smicha. Tosfot here asks more generically about the Gemara in Zvachim that tests all sorts of derivative or double limudim, which is that can you have a gezera shava and then a gezera shava to a gezera shava? Once you've created a gezera shava, can you pass that gezera shava on by having another gezera shava? Or if you have a hekesh between two items, once you learn something from that hekesh, can you pass on that hekesh to something else through another hekesh? And so the Gemara goes through all sorts of different combinations there in the Gemara in Zvachim. And with regards to Kodashim, there are some limitations, including the fact that you can't learn a Hekesh to a Hekesh. So the question here is, you have a Hekesh, which is Olat Nidava is teaching us to Olat Chova. And then from that, you want to create a Binyan Av to learn from Olat Chova to Shomei Chova. Are you allowed to have that type of extension of Limud from the Hekesh, where the item that you learn from the Hekesh then can be passed on to something else through a Binyan Av? And Tosfot says that in the Gemara in Zvachim, it sounds like that may not be possible. And yet that's exactly what the Gemara is suggesting over here. It says that it's a question in the Gemara in Zvachim whether that can be done. And therefore the Gemara here is basically in parentheses saying, Im Timsa Lomar. If we say that a Hekesh can be extended through a Binyan Av, maybe the source for Beit Hillel's position that Shalmei Chova requires Smicha is through Olat Nidava and not from Shamei Chova, because we'll get Olat Nidava to Olat Chova, and then from Olat Chova to Shamei Chova. So Gemara says, Maishna mi Shamei Nidava delo gmiri. Why can't you learn out Shamei Chova directly from Shamei Nidava? If you have a Binyan Av says, I look at a paradigm, and I say, well, here's a paradigm, and I can extend that paradigm or extrapolate it to another item. So why are you more comfortable extrapolating from an Olat Chova to a Shamei Chova then you are from a Shalmei Nedava to a Shalmei Chova? You would think the two Shlamim are more similar, and therefore you would extend it from the Shlamim rather than extend it or learn the Binyan Av from the Olat Chova. Where it says the reason you wouldn't do that is because Shekein Mitzuyin, because they are commonplace or found. The way Rashi explains this is that Shekein Mitzuya b'chol sha'ashi yirtzeina devi avi. A voluntary offering is different than a obligatory offering. Voluntary offering, you can bring it at any time whenever you decide that you feel like you want to bring it. You can bring it of your own volition, and you can bring it anytime you please. Whereas an Olat Chova requires either a time-based trigger, or it requires a trigger of some sort of misdeed that allows you to bring it. So there you are locked into the fixed times when you can bring the Olat. So you can't learn necessarily from a Shalmei Nedava to a Shalmei Chova, because Shalmei Nedava are much more, quote-unquote, frequent, or they're just much more easily accessed than a Shalmei Chova. And maybe that's why you have smicha by the Shalmei Nedava, and you wouldn't have that requirement by the Shalmei Chova. So Gemara says, you can have the same problem, Olat Chova, nami lo gamre. You could also say from Olat Chova, you shouldn't learn towards a Shalmei Nedava, Shekein Kalil. That has a chumra to it, which is that an Olat Chova might require smicha, because it goes entirely to Hashem on the Mizbeach. But maybe a Shalmei Chova, which part of it's eaten by the Kohanim, part of it by the Balim, and part of it by the Mizbeach, maybe in that instance you would not require smicha. So why are you more apt to learn from an Olat Chova than you are to learn from Shalmei Nedava? Both of them have a deficit, which is that there's a chumra in the teaching side that may not let you learn. By Shlamim, the teaching side is the Shalmei Nedava, which is more frequent or common. And by the Olat Chova side, the teaching side of Olat Chova is that it's Kaleo. So Shalmei Chova, I couldn't learn out from either of them. So why are you saying I'll learn it out of Olat Chova and not out of Shalmei Nedava? The answer is, Atya Mebinaya. We'll learn it out from a combination of them too, which is a Mehatzad. Mehatzad says I take two items that have a similar din, and I look at the common denominator between them. And I say, well, one of them has a Chumra, and the other one has a Chumra. But the two Chumrot are not matching, they're not the same. So that cannot be the trigger for why there's Smicha over here. So the fact that a Shalmei Nedava requires Smicha can't be driven by the fact that it's frequent and that it is a nedava, because we find that an Olat Chova also has smicha. And you can't tell me that the reason Olat Chova or an Olat has smicha is because it's Kalil, it goes entirely Mizbeach, because we find smicha by Shalmei Nedava. So each of those are canceled out. What's left is the common denominator between them, which is a korban yachid, that is a shlamim or an olah, and requires nisachim. It should also require smicha. And that's what we have by a shalmei chovah. It's a korban yachid that has nisachim, and it is a shlamim. It should require smicha. So we'll learn it out of the common denominator between them. And so therefore, the Gemara is suggesting here, if that's the case, then this braita that we brought that learns it out from the pasuk could be either Beit Shammai or Beit Hillel. It could be Beit Shammai because it's only has a limud for olah, and that limud for olah is not extended to shalmei chovah. So an olat nedava and olat chovah requires smicha according to Beit Shammai, but only a shalmei nedava, not a shalmei chovah, will require smicha, and that'll be based on the fact that you only have a pasuk by olah. Whereas Beit Hillel might learn the same thing from the pasuk. They learn olat chovah from olat nedava. The only thing is that they then take that olat chovah, match it up with shalmei nedava, and say if I pair those together, the common denominator of those two items will allow me also to learn that shalmei chovah have a requirement of smicha. So they, either one of them could be the author of this braita. So then the Gemara asks about this more fundamentally. Shebeit Shammai omrim eno tzarich, uveit Hillel omrim tzarich. So therefore, the understanding of this limud here, or this braita, as we already noted back in the Mishnah, is that Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel are arguing more fundamentally about shalmei chovah. Obligatory shlamim, do they require smicha or not? Beit Shammai says they don't require smicha, irrespective of whether it's Yom Tov or not. Even on Chol, they wouldn't require it. And Beit Hillel says that they do require smicha, and that's irrespective of Chol or Yom Tov. If it's Chol, for sure. And then on Yom Tov also, they say that it overrides any Isur Derabanan that you would have for having doing smicha on Yom Tov. The question of why it's found in our Mishnah then, which is dealing with an issue of Yom Tov. So one possibility the Shita Mekubetzet offers is that our Mishnah is coming to tell you the power of Beit Hillel, that a shalmei chovah requires a smicha even on Yom Tov, and that's why it's included here, to tell you how far Beit Hillel's position goes. Or the Noda B'Yehuda makes the suggestion that the Mishnah is giving the context about which shlamim they're arguing about. Because we're talking about Yom Tov, which is shalmei chagigah, which is shalmei chovah, that's an indication of where the machloket Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai is. And so it gives you context, and that's why it's included in our Mishnah, even though it's not only relevant to Yom Tov, but putting in the context of Yom Tov makes us aware of the fact that that's where their machloket is. Now the Gemara challenges that and says, V'sarei Beit Shammai, Shalmei Chovah, lo bayus smicha. Are you telling us that fundamentally Beit Shammai don't believe that Shalmei Chovah requires smicha, which is basically what we just set up based on the previous braita? Batanya, we have another braita. Amar Rabbi Yossi, lo nechluku Beit Shammai Beit Hillel ala smicha tzma, shitzarich. They both agree that you do require smicha when it comes to a shalmei chovah. Ela mana ama nechluku. So then what do they argue about? I'll take of the smicha shchita, whether there's a requirement to juxtapose the smicha to the shchita. And that's because in the psukim, it's always written, for instance, by the shlamim, smach yadol rosh korbano shchato petach ol moed. So immediately after the smicha is brought the shchita. And the same is true by the Ola, where it says, "V'samach yadol rosh Ola v'nitzol l'chaper bel v'shachat et ben abakar." So shchita always is found immediately after the smicha. So the question is, how binding is that smichut, that juxtaposition of the two in the psukim? And so Beit Shammai omrim enu tzarich. So you have to do smicha and shchita, but they don't have to be juxtaposed to each other. They don't have to be done immediately one after the other. And therefore, you can do the smicha on erev Yom Tov. And you can do the shchita on Yom Tov itself. And since you can do the smicha on Erev Yom Tov, we're not going to allow you to violate a din derabonon on Yom Tov in order to do the smicha on Yom Tov. Do it beforehand and it'll be just as good. Whereas Beit Hillel omrim tzarich, you do require smicha to be immediately before the shchita. Therefore, the only possibility of doing the smicha is on Yom Tov itself when you're going to do the shchita for the shalmei chagigah. If that's the case, they say that we waive the din derabonon in this situation, so people can do smicha and bring a korban on Yom Tov. So the Gemara says, "Hu damar ki haitano." That's okay. We have another braita. Detanya, Amar Rav Yossi Rav Yehuda, lo nechluku Beit Shammai Beit Hillel, I'll take of the smicha shchita shitzarich. They don't argue about this point as to whether smicha has to be immediately preceding the shchita. That is for sure the case. Both Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai hold that. Amar nechluku. So then, what do they argue about? Ha smicha atzma. Whether there's a requirement for smicha at all. Shebeit Shammai omrim eno tzarich, it's not required. Beit Hillel omrim tzarich, and Beit Hillel says it is required. So we have two braitot. One braita that tells us the machloket is about how juxtaposed does the smicha have to be to the shechita, and that would be the machloket Beit Hillel and Shammai, but fundamentally they both agree that shamei chova requires smicha. We have another braita that says that it has nothing to do with that. Everybody agrees that shechita has to come merely after you do the smicha, but the question they have is fundamentally whether shamei chova require smicha or not. And that braita that was brought by Rabbi Yisrael Baba before will be following that position of the Tano, believes that that is their machloket. Tosafot points out, interestingly enough, that Rashi on the Mishnah gave a different interpretation as to what their machloket is about. Over here, it sounds like it's two fundamental issues. Either whether you have to do smicha immediately before shechita, or whether you have a requirement of smicha on a shomei chova. That Rashi on the Mishnah says, because it is mishtamesh bebalei chayim, which is what I noted, that there's a din derabanan, that you're not allowed to lean or ride on top of behemot, and when you do smicha b'chol kocho, then it requires you to lean heavily on the animal, which would be a violation of nisur d'rabanan. And the question is, did the rabbanan uphold that isur over here with regards to smicha? And then that would either preclude you from being able to do it on Yom Tov, because you can't do the smicha, which is necessary, or if you waive that din d'rabanan, like Beit Hillel would say, then you would be allowed to do it on Yom Tov. So why does Rashi bring something that's not mentioned here? Here we have two explanations for the machloket, and Rashi brings a third explanation. So Tosafot says that his perushes makes sense, because in the Gemara in Chagiga, Rabbi Yochanan brings this as a third possibility as to what the machloket is, and Rashi is explaining it according to that view in Rabbi Yochanan, that that is the machloket between Hillel and Beit Shammai, which is that it's less fundamental and more about a question about an Isur D'Rabbanan, whether we uphold it in the face of blocking your ability to do smicha, and therefore bring a Korban Shalmei Chagiga on Yom Tov. Now, Tosafot criticizes Rashi's explanation of the Pasuk, because if you look in Sefer Vayikra, Parshat Shmini, and you look at the context of where it says, Vayakrev et ha'olah, Vayaseh ha'mishpat, that's not speaking about the olah of Aaron, it's speaking about the olah of the Am. Over there, there's numerous requirements in terms of what you have to bring, and Aaron has to bring an Ego Ben Bakar L'Chatat, Vayol Le'olah. And Bnei Yisrael have to bring Sirizim l'chatat, Egel v'kesev le'olah, and then Shor v'ayol l'shlamim. So, if you look through the psukim, by the time we get to that pasuk in pasuk tetzayin, which says, v'yikrev et olah v'yasech mishpat, the Torah has already spoken about the olah of Aaron. And the olah of Aaron has already been brought. It says, v'yishkat olah v'imtziu b'nei Aaron olah v'tadam v'yikrev mizbech saviv. They already brought that korban. So the left to be brought is the olah of the Am. And that's the context in which that pasuk was written. And therefore, Tosafot says it's not speaking about the olat Aaron, but rather the olat Am. The problem with that is, number one, now you're learning about a korban yachid from a korban tzibur, because that's a korban tzibur of the Am. And now you're trying to tell me that that teaches us about the din of an olat chova of a yachid, because korbanei tzibur do not require smicha with the exception of one or two korbanot. So how can you learn from a korban that's l'sha'ah to dorot, and how can you learn from a korban tzibur to a korban yachid? So Tosafot suggests that the pasuk allows a two-way street, or opens up a two-way street, by saying that the olah here is learned from the regular olat nidava, olat dorot, and make that a two-way street. So just the olah here learns from the olat nidava, so too it can teach to an olat dorot, even though it's an olat sha'ah. In addition, he suggests that the same will be true, the fact that here you're learning an olat tzibur from an olat yachid, so too in the reverse, you can learn from olat tzibur to an olat yachid. So that's how he solves the problem. Although he then brings down from the Rabbeinu Moshe, the Yesh Leshed Peirush Rashi, that there is a way to explain Rashi's explanation, and that is to say that it's speaking about a kurban tzibur over here, but a kurban tzibur doesn't get smicha. And so it doesn't get smicha, then if we eno inyan the kurban tzibur, tail inyan kurban yachid. It says it's not needed for korban tzibur, you can use it for korban yachid. And that's how we learn from here to a korban tzibur to a korban yachid. And then the shalo dorot will still have to use this two-way street that's opened up by the pasuk that says we learn out this olah from an olat nidava. So too, the olat chova can learn from this olah the sha'ah. We're back in the Gemara Tanur Banan, Maseh Behilel HaZakein, Shevi Olato LaAzara Lismoch Alea B'Yom Tov. He brought his olah to the Azara to do smichan and on Yom Tov. So now, first of all, this is the Shitat Hillel, or Beit Hillel, which is that you're allowed to bring your Olat Chova on Yom Tov. We saw before in the Mishnah, there's two machlokot between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. One machloket is whether you can bring an Olat Chova on Yom Tov or not, where Beit Hillel says yes, Beit Shammai says no. The other one is the Shalmei Chovah, whether you can either bring it on Yom Tov or not bring it on Yom Tov, or can you bring it on Yom Tov without Smicha, or can you bring it on Yom Tov with Smicha, or can you bring it on Yom Tov even though the Rabbanan didn't allow Smicha because you're allowed to override that, or did the Rabbanan uphold their din there? Those two things are the machloka between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. So here, Hillel, the Shitato, is bringing Olat Chovah. He's bringing Olat Re'iyah that he brought for the Regel up to the Mikdash to bring it on Yom Tov. And he's going to do Smicha on it like you would do on an Olat Chovah, as we just saw before. Chibru Olav, Tamidei Shammai HaZakein. So some Tamidim of Shammai HaZakein basically surrounded him and started to pressure him. Amrulo, Mativashel Be'mazo. What type of Kurban are you bringing over here? They were trying to press back on him because they wanted to uphold the Shita of their Rebbe Shammai, who says you're not allowed to bring an Olat Chovah on Yom Tov. Amar Lahem, Nekevahi. Ah, don't worry about it. It's a female animal. And I brought it to bring it as a shlamim. So he basically said a white lie to them and said that I wasn't bringing a olah, I'm bringing a shlamim, to which Beit Shammai supposedly also agrees that you would bring shalmei chovah on Yom Tov. And the question of smicha, we don't see any smicha over here, so that's not going to be something they're going to catch. Now he mentioned that it's a female animal because olot are only brought from zecharim. So when he said it's a female animal, he's precluding it from being an olah, and he's saying, or basically indicating that it is a shlamim. And kishkei shlam is zanva. And he also moved the tail around a little bit to hide the gender of the animal, so they couldn't see that it was really a male and not a female. Va'uchulahem. And then they disappeared. Va'oto ayom gavra yadam shel Beit Shammai Beit Hillel. And that left an indelible mark, because Hillel basically cowered to the Beit Shammai in that case, which would have established the fact that the halacha is going to be like Beit Shammai. The fact that he backed down in the face of the threat from the Beit Shammai shows you that he must believe the halacha is like Shammai. And therefore, ubikshu l'kva halacha kimotan. And therefore, they wanted to establish the halacha like the Talmidim of, like Shammai, rather than like Hillel. Vayasham zaken achad mitalmidei Shammai zaken. But there was one elderly individual who was a student of Shammai zaken, ubava ben buta shemo. His name is Baba Ben Buta. He's famous for the stories in the beginning of Baba Batra with regards to the interaction with Herod. After Herod had killed that many of the Chachamim, he kept Baba Ben Buta around to give him advice, and he poked out his eyes in order to blind him, but then keep him for his advice. And in that story, the final or the bottom line is that he convinces Herod to renovate or rebuild the Beit HaMikdash, and that's the Beit HaSheni that we know of and the remnants that we have today, or from that Herodian renovation of the Beit Sheni, and what we saw in the Gemara in Sukkah, that Koshel Ra Beit HaMikdash, Lo Ra'a Binyan Mifuar Bechayav, someone who didn't see the Beit HaMikdash is referencing to this rebuilding or renovation of Herod that was supposedly, according to that Gemara, spurred on by Bava Ben Buta. And he knew that the halacha was like Beit Hillel, despite the fact that he was a Talmud of Shammai Zaken. He knew that the right halacha was like Beit Hillel. V'shalach ve'vi kol tzon kedar shebi Yerushalayim. He brought all of the choicest tzon of Yerushalayim. Tosfot says he can't take it so literally because you're not allowed to bring chulin into the Azara. So he says, you know, maybe it wasn't dafka in the Azara, maybe it was in Har HaBayit, or maybe you could explain that it wasn't about only chulin. He just told anybody who has an olah to bring their olot today. And that's actually the way that it's found in the Yerushalmi, that he encouraged the people to come up to Har HaBayit, take animals and bring olot and shlamim, basically to demonstrate to this his opposition to this view that the halacha is like Beit Shammai or like Shammai, rather the halacha is like Hillel, and that one is permitted to bring an olat re'iyah on Yom Tov, and of course do smicha on it, and then that would seemingly also say that you can bring a shalmei chovah or shalmei chagigah on Yom Tov and do smicha on it as well. And because of that opposition demonstration that was made by Baba Ben Buta, who was a Talmud of Shammai HaZakein, therefore oto yom gavra yadan shel Beit Hillel. Then the view of Beit Hillel took hold, v'kavu halacha k'motan. Therefore they established the halacha like them, lo yasham adam shir erba devar klum. And nobody could question the halacha anymore, because they were empowered by a Talmud of Shammai, who obviously was a big Zakein, a huge Talmud Chacham, and one of the leaders of Yerushalayim, who was saying that the halacha should be like Hillel. What's interesting about Hillel's white lie over here is Rashi says the following. Mirov anvatunoto shel Hillel haya mishaneh mipnei shalom. Because of his great humility, he changed in order not to have an altercation with the Talmidim of Shammai. Now that's interesting on a number of levels. You could have just said that the reason he changed it is based on the Gemara in Baba Metzia that says that one is allowed to change Mipnei Shalom. One is allowed to lie or change the facts in order to bring peace between parties. And so who says that it has to do with his humility? It could just be that he was following that prescriptive Gemara that says that when you have a altercation, you can make shalom. That's better to make shalom, even if you have to lie a little bit about it. And that's what he does over here. So why does it mention Mipnei Anvatunato? So I think it might be referencing to two other Gemaras. One Gemara is the stories of Shammai and Hillel in Masechet Shabbat, whereby these three different individuals came to Shammai and Hillel and asked them these ridiculous things, and Shammai pushed each of them away, and Hillel was accepting them. One of them, for instance, is a individual who says, I want to convert and be a Kohen Gadol. And Shammai says, you can't do that. Get out of here. Hillel, on the other hand, says, oh, sure, come and convert, and you'll be a Kohen Gadol. Then he starts to learn the Halachot, and he realizes he can't be a Kohen Gadol. He's going to be Chayav Karet for doing that. And he converts without becoming a Kohen Gadol. But you see over there that the humility or the behavior of Hillel included a little bit of a white lie there, which is that he said to the person, you can convert and be a Kohen Gadol, even though he knew for sure he couldn't become a Kohen Gadol. So that's part of the nature of Hillel, and his humility was that he was willing to forego or look past some of these issues by having a slightly white lie about them. And so that's true of his personality there, where the Gemara is speaking specifically about his humility and about his conduct of being a personable individual and someone who was soft and kind to others. And so that humility is mentioned in that context. And in that context, there are also some white lies that he tells in order to encourage these individuals who've then come around to the truth on their own once they start learning. So same thing over here. Maybe he was saying a white lie, and Rashi thinks that because of Anvatanuto, that's what caused or that's what precipitated his seeking peace and acting in this manner, similar to that Gemara in Shabbat. Also, the Gemara in Gittin, which discusses the Churban HaBayit and Daf Nun Vav Amud Aleph, the Gemara there says that in order to test the Jews, whether they were rebelling or not, they sent a Qurban to sacrifice on the Mizbeach in the Mikdash, but they put in it a blemish, that is a blemish for Jews, but not for non-Jews. So the Rabbanan thought to put on the Mizbeach because of Shalom Malchut. And Zechariah ben Avkulus said people are going to get the wrong impression because they're going to think Balei Mumim could be put on the Mizbeach. So they thought to kill this individual who was maligning the Jews to the Roman authorities. And again, Zechariah ben Avkulus says don't kill him because people think that's the punishment for putting Mum into Kodashim. And then Amar Rabbi Yochanan concludes, Anvantanuto shel Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulus echriva et beiteinu. His humility, I mean his inability or reluctance to go against the grain of halacha or see that there was a problem here, ended up causing the Churban HaBayit and Safarat Chechalenu Mikleitenu Me'artzenu. And in that way, what Rashi is saying here might be a veiled criticism of Hillel, because Hillel's anivut over here, which made him that he didn't want to confront the Talmidim of Shammai, almost led to the situation or circumstance in which the halacha would become like Beit Shammai improperly, not like Beit Hillel. And so his anvanuto, which he went to seek shalom, would end up causing a quote-unquote churban in the fact that the wrong psak halacha would be reached in that situation because of the bullying of the Talmidei Beit Shammai, which Hillel stepped away from, rather than confronting them and saying that that's not the halacha and saying that I'm bringing olah and establishing the halacha properly. So maybe those are two possibilities as to why Rashi mentions the Anvatonoto Shel Hillel. Now, continuing on the Gemara on Chaf Amud Bet, Gemara says, Suv Maseh B'Talmidei Chad B'Talmidei Beit Hillel. There was also another incident with one of the students of Beit Hillel. Shevi Olato La'Azara L'Smoch Ala. He brought his Ola to the Azara again. So in Olat Chovad, he's going to do Smichanet. Matsu Talmidei Chad B'Talmidei Beit Shammai. And one of the Talmidei Beit Shammai found him and saw him doing this. Amar Lo, Mazo Smicha. Why are you doing smicha over here? What exactly is going on here? Samalo, mazu shtika. You're better off remaining silent. So shatko benizifa. And that strong statement back to him that you're better off being silent, that chastisement shut him down. Bahalach lo, and he walked off, and he was able to keep the halacha like Beit Hillel. Amrabaya ilkach. The conclusion of this is, Haid sumer mi derabonon. If you have a young whippersnapper, Talmud Chacham, Darmalei chavrei milta, that someone says something to you that, whether it's offensive or wrong, halachically against the position that you have, lo lahad le milta tvei mimayda amar le chavrei. Don't respond with a more wordy or verbose answer than the accusation or the position that was taken against you. Dihiu, in this case, amar le mazos micha. The confrontation took place by the Talmud of Beit Shammai coming and saying, what's this smicha? Become out of the lay, and he simply answered him, mazos shtika. You're better off being silent over here. And so that same statement, a very small, concise statement that pushed against the position of that Talmud of Beit Shammai was sufficient to win the argument and to win the day. And therefore, that's a paradigm by which one should carry themselves when they're in an intellectual argument like this, that one should make sure to answer in a proportional manner to the statement or the position that's presented against you. Now, what's very interesting about this is that this Talmud, and maybe this is why it worked that the Talmud of Beit Hillel was able to shut him down, didn't mention the fact that he was bringing an olah. He was bringing an olah. Not only was he doing something that Beit Shammai doesn't approve of in terms of smicha, he was bringing an olah. And olah tchova is something that Beit Shammai does not approve of on Yom Tov. So why didn't he confront him about the olah rather than simply the smicha? So it could be that he didn't know. Because if you bring a male animal to the Mikdash, it could be brought as an olah, it could be brought as a shlamim. So maybe he was just not aware of what he was going to do with it, so therefore he could only see the thing that he was actually doing, which was smicha, which he knew was problematic for Beit Shammai, but he didn't know why he was bringing the korban, because they agreed that shalmei chagiga could be brought, but not a olat ri'iya or an olat chova. So he challenged him with the issue that he knew that was problematic, and he knew for sure he was doing incorrectly according to Beit Shammai. So that's one possibility. Or the other possibility is that maybe this person wasn't so well versed in the positions of Beit Shammai, and he was basically looking to pick a fight or to just bother to harass the Talmidim of Beit Hillel. And that's evidenced by the fact that he went after the smicha, not the fundamental issue that they were bringing olat chova. And that might be another reason for why when the Talmid of Beit Hillel gave a strong response to him that he backed down, because he wasn't so sure of his position, he was just trying to harass him. Right, so now continuing in the Gemara, Tanya, Amar lohem Beit Hillel leBeit Shammai, Ma b'makom she'asur lehajot mutar legevoah. So Beit Hillel says to Beit Shammai, when it comes to Shabbat, on Shabbat, where a lay person can't cook for themselves, can't prepare anything for themselves, yet despite that mutar legevoah, their korbanot are allowed to be brought to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because all the korbanot tzibur on Shabbat override Shabbat, are allowed to be brought, makom she'mutar lehajot on Yom Tov, where there is a heter ochel nefesh for the individuals, meaning the layperson in their mundane matters have a right to violate the malacha in order to eat, enu din shemutar legevoah, then certainly you should be able to bring korbanot. So this is Beit Hillel's logic, suggesting that that's a reason why the yechidim should be able to bring korbanot on Yom Tov. So amar lohem Beit Shammai, nidarim u'nidavot yochichu. Voluntary offerings will prove us right, which is that even though lay people can eat on Yom Tov, even you agree, Beit Hillel, that you're not allowed to bring nedarim and nedavot. You're not allowed to bring these voluntary offerings. Shemutar lehajot. You can't have mundane ochel nefesh, vasur legevoah, but you can't bring voluntary korbanot. From lohem Beit Hillel, mal nedarim and nedavot shein kavulam zman. They don't have a fixed time. So that's right. Yes, they are out of the picture because they aren't relevant to today particularly. They're just relevant to be brought any time. So therefore, we won't invoke the Kav HaChomer with regards to those. But tomar bo olat ri'iyah shekavul hazman, but when it comes to an olat ri'iyah, which does have a fixed time to be brought, then why wouldn't it override Yom Tov, just like the individual's personal needs override Yom Tov? Melohem Beit Shammai, abzu ein kavul hazman. That's not true either. Olat ri'iyah does not have to be brought on Yom Tov itself. It's not, because we have a Mishnah. Mishlo chag b'yom tov rishon, shochach, whoever didn't bring their korban on the first day of Yom Tov, chol gev cholech chol erego kulo, they can bring it any time during chol moed, b'yom tov acharon shochag, and even on the last day of Sukkot, on Shmini Atzeret, or on Shvi Shel Pesach. So there is no fixed time. The fixed time is not on the day of Yom Tov, you can bring it any day of chol moed. So if it's not a fixed time, then why would you say that it should override? It should be no different than the Darim and Devot. Well then, Beit Hillel, avzu kavul hazman. That's not true. It does have a fixed time. The Tanan, Avar Regel v'lo Chag, if the Regel passes and you haven't brought the proper korbanot that are associated with the Yom Tov, including the Shamei Chagiga and the Olot Riyah, Enu Chaya B'achriyuto. You're not responsible to bring them anymore, or basically Avar Zmano Batel Korbanot. You can't bring them. You've lost out that opportunity to bring the korbanot. So there is a fixed time in which to bring them. The fixed time is a window rather than a particular day. So that window makes it that we want you to bring it as soon as possible, or that it should override Yom Tov. So I'm letting Beit Shammai, so Beit Shammai comes and retorts again, V'alo kfar nemar lachem v'lo legvoa. It says, Hu levado yaseh lachem, which is the heter ochel nefesh, by Yom Tov. It says there lachem, that you can only do things that are for you. And the miut is for you and not for a Kodesh Baruch Hu, meaning that you're allowed to prepare for yourself, but you're not allowed to bring things that only go to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So when it comes to a Shalmei Chagiga, there Beit Shammai agrees, because there you're going to eat from it, so therefore it's permitted to be brought on Yom Tov. When it comes to an Olah Triyah, where the Olah is Kulo LaHashem, there's no Lachem involved in it. If there's no Lachem, then there's no Heter Ochel Nefesh, you won't be able to bring the Olah Triyah. And that's the Limud. Amalem Beit Hillel, Halok Varnemar LaHashem. Doesn't it already say, we quoted this pasuk before, V'chagutom Oto Chag LaHashem, Kol LaHashem, that even things that are LaHashem can be brought on the Chag, or can be brought on Yom Tov. So then, what do they do with the word lachem, which is clearly a miut? They have lachem velo lekutim, lachem velo leklavim. This is what we mentioned before, that there are other items that are excluded from heter ochel nefesh. One of them is non-Jews. One may not prepare food for a non-Jew, even though there's heter ochel nefesh, that's for Jews, not for non-Jews. And that does raise issues if people have non-Jewish guests at their table on Yom Tov, or if they have in their house non-Jewish guests on Yom Tov, because heter ochel nefesh does not apply to them. As well as the fact that lachem lo leklavim, you can prepare food for human consumption, you cannot prepare food for animal consumption. The heter ochel nefesh doesn't apply to them. The Tosafot over here says that Beit Hillel is also dorish lachem velo lagvoa, because they do say lemeute nedarim nedavot, comes to exclude nedarim nedavot. So they have to have some preclusion. And so he suggests that the preclusion is lachem velo lagvoa, that they learn it for particular items. They don't learn it as broadly as Beit Shammai, because they have the mitigating factor of Lashem. So Lashem says you do bring some korbanot that are for Hashem on Yom Tov, and Lachem Lo Gva says you don't bring certain korbanot that are Hashem. And Beit Hillel differentiates and says those that are kavulam zman you can bring on Yom Tov, those that are not kavulam zman you cannot bring on Yom Tov, so therefore nedarim and nedavot cannot be brought, whereas Olot Riyah can be brought on Yom Tov. That's the way Tosfot explains it, although from the Pashtuta Gemara, that's not the way that Beit Hillel is learning. Beit Hillel seems to have an alternative limud with regards to lachem, and the possibility is that the restriction against bringing the darim and the devot is because it's not necessary. It's not something that's a tzorech yom tov. And as the Baal Tosafot suggested before, if you don't have a tzorech yom tov, you can't bring those korbanot on yom tov, even though there's a heter ochel nefesh, and even though Beit Hillel subscribes to mitoch. Mitoch still says you have to have some necessity of yom tov. But maybe that's the reason you can't bring the darim and the devot. Now the Gemara continues in Abba Shaul Omrab Lashon Acheret. We have another version of this Braita that speaks about this interaction between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. We have the Tanakama's version of it. Now we have Abba Shaul's version of it. Ma b'makom shekiratcha stuma, in a place where your oven is sealed up, kirat rabcha ptucha, your master's oven is open. So this, again, is a reference to Shabbat. And the kira is something that you cook on. And Rashi points out, kira is like a stovetop which has two openings in it. And you place a kdeira, you place something to cook on the openings. So then when you put something on it to cook, it's ptucha, it's open, it's ready to be used, it's fired up, and it's going to cook. Whereas when it's stuma, it's sealed up, it's closed, then there's nothing to be placed on top of it, it's not cooking. So that's what it means according to Rashi, it's referring to the oven itself, the stovetop itself. And therefore, on Shabbat, where your stovetop is sealed up, whereas the stovetop of a Kadosh Baruch Hu was open, meaning korbanot are brought, but you can't prepare foods on Shabbat. Makom shekiratcha ptucha, on Yom Tov, where your stove is also open, because heter ochel nefesh, enudin shekirat rabcha ptucha, certainly your master's kirat oven stove should be open as well, meaning you should be able to bring those korbanot, like the Olah Tri'iyah. The Tosfot over here gives an alternative that the kirat is not, like Rashi says, literally speaking about a stovetop, rather kirat also means to dig, or to excavate. And they used to make their stoves by digging a ditch or a pit, and that may be what's the reference to over here. Kira means that you're opening up a ditch, or you're digging the ditch that prepares one to have an oven. So ptucha and stuma might have to reference to that, rather than to the kira, to the stove itself. Then, v'chein bedin. Not only is that true in terms of a kal v'chomer, but there's also another logical argument which says, shelo yeh shulchan chamalei v'shulchan rabcha reikan, that it's not proper that your shulchan should be full, and the shulchan of your rebbe, of your master, should be empty. Mean that you should be feasting in your house, and meantime the Mizbeach has nothing on it because you're not bringing in any korbanot. That seems to be incongruous. And Tosafot quoted earlier, back on Daf Yud Bet Amud Aleph, as well as on Yud Tet, Tosafot mentioned in both places that when it comes to Heter Ochel Nefesh, you need Tzorech Yom Tov Ketzat according to Beit Hillel, which means that it has to be something that is useful on Yom Tov in order for you to say, Mitoch, that it's Heter Ochel Nefesh, it's Heter even Shalob Ochel Nefesh. And Olah is Lot Ochel Nefesh, but it should be Hutra Mitoch. But you need a Tzorech Yom Tov. And as we noted before, maybe there's no Tzorech Yom Tov. Tosafot over here says that this is classified as a tzorach yom tov. That your table is full and your master's table is empty, that logic makes it into a tzorach yom tov, and that, according to Beit Hillel, would be a permitted way to do mitoch, to have ochel nefesh, then be teach us, allow us to do something that's not ochel nefesh, because it is classified as a tzorach yom tov because of this logic. So, b'mai kamiflegei. What are they arguing about? So Rashi over here says, what is the Tana Kama and Abba Shaul arguing about? Mar Savar, Nidarim and Nidavot, Krevim B'Yom Tov. Abba Shaul says that Nidarim and Nidavot are brought, voluntary offerings can be brought on Yom Tov according to Beit Hillel. And that's why Rashi says, Beit Shammai don't challenge Beit Hillel's logic in this version of Abba Shaul. They don't challenge him because in the previous case they challenged Beit Hillel because they said, well, you think Nidarim and Nidavot cannot be brought on Yom Tov, and yet you can still eat on Yom Tov. So your logic doesn't play through. So then they challenged them. On Abba Shaul's explanation, there's no such challenge. So Rashi claims that shows you that Abba Shaul believes that Beit Hillel thinks that Nedarim and Devot can be brought on Yom Tov. Umar Savar and the Tana Kama believes ain't craving be Yom Tov, and that's why that challenge was brought before. Tosafot over here brings that there was an alternate view from the Rishbam as to what the Perush was here, and he reversed the positions. But Tosafot says that we find in other places that Abba Shaul is of the belief that Nedarim and Nedavot are brought on Yom Tov, and therefore it accords or is in consonance with the position that Rashi presents here, not of the Rashbam, who reverses the two positions as to who believes that you can bring or cannot bring Nidarim and Devot on Yom Tov. Now the truth is that both of these Kal V'Chomers are somewhat problematic, which is based on the principle that we have by Kal V'Chomer of Dayo, which means that you can't learn more than what the original item had. So the original item of Shabbat, we said the Hedjot is restricted, and Gavoa, and that which is on the Mizbeach, is permitted. So then we say, on Yom Tov, where the Hedjot is permitted, then certainly the Gavoa should be permitted. Well, what is permitted on Shabbat is only Korbanei HaTzibur that have Kavu Lam Zman. So if you learn a Kal V'Chomer from Shabbat to Yom Tov, then you can only go as far as what is permitted on Shabbat will you be able to permit on Yom Tov. And so the Kal V'Chomer would just permit you to bring Korbanei HaTzibur that are Kavu Lam Zman. And that doesn't help us, because we would have had that even without the Kal V'Chomer. So how can you learn from this Kal V'Chomer the fact that individuals can bring Korbanot that Kavu Lam Zman on Yom Tov? That's beyond what is true on Shabbat, and then how does that work logically from the Kal V'Chomer? So therefore, they tried to reword the Kal V'Chomer in the following manner, which is, just like by Shabbat, the heter of Melacha to Hekdesh is greater than that of Hedyot, of the lay people. On Shabbat, nothing's permitted to a lay person, and there is what is permitted to Hekdesh. So what they're suggesting now is on Yom Tov, the same should be true. That which is permitted to a Hedyot, there should be more that is permitted to Gavoa, to Hekdesh. So you have to have something more than that is permitted on Shabbat, because now by the Yom Tov, there's a greater Heter for the Hedyot. If that's true, then Heter Ochel Nefesh is a given in terms of its Heter, in terms of Hekdesh. So then we have to have something beyond that, and that would be like the Ola, for something that isn't the Heter Ochel Nefesh, and that's the logic that's based here on the Kal V'Chomer that avoids this problem of Dayo. So Amar Rav Huna, the Divrei Omer, Nedarim Nedavot, Ein Krevim B'Yom Tov, according to that view or position that you're not allowed to bring Nedarim Nedavot on Yom Tov, Lo Teima Midoraita Michlechozu, don't say that technically Min HaTorah, it is permissible to bring Nedarim Nedavot, Rabban Ruhu, the Gazri Ruhu, Gezeira, Shema Yishaheh. And it's the Rabbanon that put in place a Gzeira that prevent you from bringing them on Yom Tov because we're afraid that you might lay them over. The Chachamim didn't want you laying over your Korbanot until the Regel in order to bring them on the Regel rather than when you could come up or at earlier times. Because it might happen that when you come to the Regel or something happens at the Regel that you have an Ones and then you don't end up bringing it. So they maybe restricted your ability to bring these Korbanot and Nedavah on the Regel because they wanted to push you to do it earlier rather than tarry or delay or procrastinate to bring it on the regel, which you would have done in order that you'll have plenty of meat to consume on the regel. So Rav Huna says, don't say that. Ela afilu midoraita nami lo chazu. They're not even ra'uim midoraita. I mean, that this restriction against nedarim and nedavot is a Torah-prescribed restriction and not just a rabbinic injunction. Da'a, and I can prove that to you, shtei alechem tuchovat ayom ninu. The shtei alechem, which are the two bread loaves that are brought on Shavuot with the kivsei atzeret, which are the shalmei tzibur that are brought on Shavuot. So those shtei alechem, they are korbanei atzibur, and yet, b'leka l'migzar shema yishaheh, and there's no question about delaying them because they have to be brought on Shavuot and they're brought by the tzibur on Shavuot. Nevertheless, v'eno docheh lo et ha-shabbat v'lo et ha-yom tov. And the baking of those shtei alechem does not doche Yom Tov, it's not doche Shabbat, and you have to actually prepare them before Yom Tov or before Shabbat. So you see that, and even though with regards to the Shtei Lechem, there's no issue of Shema Yishehev because there's no requirement to bake them before Yom Tov or to bake them before you need them. And so therefore there's no issue of Shema Yishehev, yet we see despite that fact, you still have to do or the preparations for the Shtei Lechem before Yom Tov. It's not Doche Yom Tov. Also similarly with the Nerim and Devot, which could be brought before Yom Tov, where there is this problem of Shema Yishehev, and they're not subsumed under V'chagotam Atom Chag LaHashem. The Hashem means Kulo, includes anything that is LaHashem, because we already defined that LaHashem is only true when it's a Kurban, it's Kavulo Zman. But these items that are not Kavulo Zman, these Nedim and Devot, they're not covered by that Pasuk. And therefore there's no het there for them on Yom Tov. And therefore, you should bring them before Yom Tov and not bring them on Yom Tov itself. So anything that is not compelled to be brought on Yom Tov itself should not be brought on Yom Tov or done on Yom Tov. So just like the Shtei Lechem, which are Kavulam's mine, and are going to be brought on Shavuot. Nevertheless, we don't say their baking overrides Dine Yom Tov or Dine Shabbat. So to over here, Nedarim and Devot, which don't have to be brought on Yom Tov, certainly they shouldn't override the Isur Malacha that's associated with Yom Tov. And even though the truth is that these loaves of bread are going to be fully eaten by the Kohanim, which means that they are Tzorech Hedyot, and therefore it should be covered under Ochel Nefesh and should be able to bake them on Yom Tov. Nevertheless, since they are done Ligvah, since they are prepared for Hekdesh, they do not get the Heter of Ochel Nefesh, because we say Lachem Velo Ligvah. So if you invoke that with regards to the Shtei Lechem, then certainly you should invoke it with regards to Nidarim and Nidavot. So now the Gemara queries, Yibailu, the Divrei Omer Nidarim and Nidavot ain't Krivim B'Yom Tov. According to one who says you're not allowed to bring Nidarim and Nidavot on Yom Tov, Avar V'Shachat Mai. What happens if the person did it anyway? He wasn't supposed to bring another Nidava on Shabbat, and instead he followed through, he did it, even without permission or that improperly. He went ahead and shechted another Nidava, and now we want to know what to do. Should they sprinkle the dam and bring the Korban, or should they just send it out to the Beit Psul and say that you did something wrong? So Rav Amar, Zohreka the dam, Amanat Ladir Basar Be'achila. You do the Zvigat Adam in order to permit the Basar Be'achila, the meat or flesh to be eaten, because then that is something that is mutar to happen right away. You can eat the basar on that day itself, because that's a tzorech yom tov. And therefore, even though there's an isur derabanan of zrika, nevertheless, we'll say do the zrika because there's an ochel nefesh value to the zrika d'adam by permitting them to eat the basar. So as long as there's basar around, then doing the zrika d'adam will permit the basar, and therefore it'll be okay to do it, even though you shouldn't have done this l'chatchila b'diavad. If you already shechted the animal, do the zrika d'adam to permit the basar, which is something that's allowed to be done or processed on Yom Tov, and therefore it'll be for Ochel Nefesh. Rabba Ravuna Amar Zorek at Adam Unat Akdir Emurim La'erev, that you do it on the condition that you're going to bring the Emurim, which are the fats that go on Mizbeach, not on Yom Tov itself, but rather after Yom Tov. So there'll be no violation of Yom Tov for Gavoa, because you can bring the Emurim after Yom Tov is over. But you can only do that if you do the Zrika Adam on Yom Tov. So we'll waive and allow you to do the Zrika Adam on Yom Tov so that the Emurim can be brought later. So Gemara says, my benayu, what's the nafkamina between these two positions? Nitma basar o shavad. If the basar became tamei or was lost. In that situation, there's no longer a heter ochel nefesh that's left. And therefore the rova lo zorik, according to rova, you can't do zrikat adam, because there's no tzad ochel nefesh that is left. On the other hand, the rabba bar Rav Huna zorik, you can do the zrikat adam, because you're just prepping it to have the ability to put the emurim on the mizbeach after Yom Tov. So you're not going to violate anything on Yom Tov. And the fact that we allow you to process the Korban is only a violation of the Shvut Dirabonon. And that Shvut Dirabonon will waive in order to allow the Korban to be brought properly and have the Emurim brought after Yom Tov. Now Tosfot points out and brings from the Rabbeinu Shimshon Mikutzi that Rabba Bar Ravuna's position is not to the exclusion of Rava, but in addition to Rava. He agrees that there's Basar there, there's no question that you can do the Zrikat Adam because that's Ochel Nefesh. He just adds, even in the absence of Basar, you could still do the Zrikat Adam because you can have the Emurim be brought after Yom Tov and there won't be a violation of Yom Tov and that would be permitted to be done or to process the Korban in that way. Tosfot then asks, both on Rava and Rabbi Ravuna, according to this, how is it possible that you can eat the Basar in Yom Tov? We have a general principle, when the Emurim are there, the Emurim have to be put on the Mizbeach and that's what gives you a Heter Achila, that's what permits you to eat the Basar. Meaning that you have to give the Mizbeach, which is Hashem, the Emurim first, and only after the Emurim are brought on the Mizbeach is there a Heter Achila Babasar. Over here, you're laying over the Emurim until after Yom Tov, and you're eating the Basar immediately, because that's what gives you the Heter Ochel Nefesh. So how does that work? How can you be eating the basar before the emurim? So Tosfos said, don't tell me that there are situations in which you can eat the basar without emurim. That's in situations where the emurim don't exist anymore. They're either tamei or they're lost and they can't be put on the mizbeach. So in that case, they're not ma'akev the basar. But in a case where they're available, they are ma'akev the basar. So Tosfos says, maybe over here, since there's no heter to put them on the mizbeach on Yom Tov, it's as if they're not there or they don't exist. And ever you're permitted to eat the basar because you can't put the emurim on before the basar is eaten. And so therefore we allow you to eat the basar even though the emurim haven't gone on the mizbeach. Now there is a more general question about the zrikat adam here, because we know that the zrikat adam is only asur here because of a shvut, because it needs to be derabanan. And we have a general principle, ain't shvut b'migdash. Those rabbinic restrictions are suspended in the migdash. Now the truth is that Tosafot in many places says that's not a generic principle, and that there are many instances where the Aral Chachamim upheld their position in a shvut b'migdash, where they felt it was important to establish the din derabanan, and they did it even in the face of hekdesh, or in the migdash. Or you could suggest over here, that when we say ain't shvut b'migdash, that's only when something's done properly, when it's done k'mitzvato. But over here, where the korban's not being processed because somebody did something wrong, over there we won't have this heter to waive these shvut derabanans, these isurei derabanan, in the Migdash, and maybe that's the reason over here that they don't invoke that principle. Dagmar says, Meitevei, kivsei atzeret, sheshachtan shelo lishman, o sheshachtan ben lifnei zmanan, ben lachar zmanan. Kivsei atzeret, which are the korbanot shlamim that are brought on Shavuot, that are the matir, they're the thing that makes the shteil lechem able to be eaten, and they were brought improperly. Either they were shechted shelo lishman, they were brought as, Rashi claims over here, as an ola, rather than a shlamim, or they were done lifnei zmanan before Yom Tov, or achar zmanan, or after Yom Tov, before Yom Tov of Shavuot, or after Yom Tov of Shavuot. In all those cases, hadam yizarek v'basar yachel. You sprinkle the dam, and you eat the basar, meaning that they are considered to be shlamim. So even though these korbanot themselves will not discharge your obligation with regards to the kitzei atzeret, because you had the wrong kavanah with regards to them, nevertheless, they still are good korbanot. And since they're a good korban, you'll be zorek the dam, and you can eat the basar of these shlamim, or these shalmei tzibur. Because as we know from the first Mishnah in Zvachim, called Zvachim, shenizbichu, shalol lishman, ksherim, likarev. You can put them on mizbeach, v'nechalim, and they can be eaten, shalol alu lebalim, l'shem chova. They just don't discharge the obligation of what they were being brought for, but they are kosher korbanot. So over here, you do the zrikat the dam, because it's ochel nefesh, which is something that is permissible on Yom Tov, because it's for achilat hedyot, because it's a shlamim. It's a kodshei kodashim, which will be consumed by the kohanim. On the other hand, imayta Shabbat, if it's Shabbat, where there is no heter ochel nefesh, and where you can't eat these korbanot, because you can't cook them, lo yizrok, you shouldn't do the zrikat adam. V'im zarak, if despite the fact that he wasn't supposed to do zrikat adam, he goes ahead and does zrikat adam, hurtzah amanat altir emurim le'erev. It works because he can have in mind to put the emurim on after Shabbat, where there'll be no violation of Shabbat. And so he can do it that way. And obviously, Almanat over here doesn't mean on the condition, but it doesn't mean that he did it in this manner, because he already did it, and he's asking us after the fact. So Almanat means that that's the condition, that if he already did the Zrikat Adam, he can't put the emurim on until that nightfall, because we don't allow him to violate Shabbat, because of the Zrikat Adam that he did improperly on Shabbat. So, im zarak, it says over here that you can do the zrika diavad. Diavad in, lachatchilolo. That's only b'diavad that we invoke this principle and say that if he did the zrika adam, then we look at it as if he did the zrika adam with the intent to bring the emurim after Shabbat, which would be permissible. But the chatchilo, we wouldn't let you do something like this. So that's bishlam on the rova necha. According to Rava, that makes sense, because Rava says the only way you do a zrika adam lachatchilo is if you have basar lechol. And on Shabbat, that's not relevant. So b'diavad, if you already did as we got Adam, we'll tell you to do the emurim after Shabbat. But the Rabbi Bar Barhuna, Akasha, for Rabbi Barhuna, he thinks that that's lechatchila. You can do this regard Adam on Yom Tov to bring the emurim after Yom Tov. And the Shabbat is equivalent to that case on Yom Tov, because here on Shabbat you can't do the ochel nefesh, you can't prepare the meat. The only thing you can do is postpone the emurim till after Shabbat. And that's a good reason, or enough of a reason, to do this regard Adam, even in violation of Yom Tov. Yet over here in this Breita, it only allows you to do that if you did it b'diavad. If it was after the fact, you're asking us, we say, okay, it worked, and it's done. But if you come to ask us before the fact, we won't let you do that. So why is there a distinction here in this Breita between the advice given only b'diavad versus Rabbi Bar Huna's position, which you can do it even l'chatchila? So where it says, Kasha, that's a good question on his position. V'ibaytema, another possibility is shiny shvut to Shabbat, mishvut to Yom Tov. That an Isud Rabbonon of Shabbat is very different than an Isud Rabbonon of Yom Tov. There's more reason to be machmir on Shabbat, to uphold the din de Rabbonon and not let somebody do the zrikat adam on Shabbat, because chechmiru chachamim divrei Shabbat mi b'Yom Tov. They're the chachamim more strict with regards to Shabbat than they were by Yom Tov. By Shabbat, they said only b'diavad, not the chatchila. On Yom Tov, where there's already other heterim and other things that are allowed to go on in the Mikdash, there we're going to say even the chatchila, if you avar v'shachat, we're going to let you do the zrikat adam, even the chatchila, on Yom Tov. Because of that distinction between Shabbat and Yom Tov. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Chaf Aleph, Amud Aleph.